Hello and welcome to Positive Thinking and the Meaning of Life. My name is Marcus Freestone. And no, you're not imagining it. Is it a bird? Is it a plane? Is it a blue moon? No, it's a podcast. Yes, after 2 years, I am back, Mother Funsters. Okay, so this episode is about self-sabotage, which is what I've been doing for the last 2 years in not doing this podcast and not maintaining what I spent so long building up. So I'm going to explain why I've been away and why I'm back and just what the ruddy hell has been going on in my head for the last couple of years. So, I've been a self-employed musician and writer for several years now. I've achieved success in creative, personal and intellectual areas, but success in business, earning a good living and making a good life for myself still eludes me. Every time something seems to be going well, I abandon it or sabotage it in some manner. Why the hell do I keep doing this? Positive thinking and the meaning of life is the one thing I've done that started to build up a genuine following. Yet I haven't recorded a podcast episode or written anything new on the subject for more than 2 years. I came to see it as a burden, something that I couldn't cope with. I acknowledge that the old model I used is not sustainable. Basically, I used to research and write an in-depth essay every week, and that's the wrong way to go about it, at least for me. It was just too much pressure. But I knew this 2 years ago, and I decided the future of the podcast was to record my spontaneous thoughts once a week, a sort of audio blog of whatever was on my mind at the time. It's a very simple model, requiring little effort on my part. So why have I been assiduously and consciously avoiding it for the last 2 years? Well, part of it is my chronic physical health problems that exhaust me and make daily life something of a struggle, but I could still do this podcast. So what's the problem? As usual, the problem does not exist in any tangible, real world sense. It exists only in my head. I spoke to my girlfriend recently and she said something that she said to me many times over the years, you're scared of success. I'm forced to admit that she is spot on, as usual. I'm living with a victim mentality. I'm like somebody in an abusive relationship who finds it impossible to believe I'm capable of doing anything on my own or that there's anything good about me. However, the only person I'm in an abusive relationship with is myself. That little bastard voice in the back of my head that refuses to ever be entirely vanquished. Why are you bothering to do this? It obviously won't work. People like you can't make it. You don't deserve success. Why don't you wreck everything and remain a failure? Failure's familiar. It's nice and comforting. You know what it feels like. Success is unfamiliar and scary. You don't want to go there. You couldn't cope with success. These are the messages my brain continually sends me, derailing my plans and keeping me stuck where I am, the familiarity of failure and disappointment. I'm sure many of you listening will identify with this scenario. Change can be scary. Neophobia is all too easy a state to succumb to. Far better to retreat into the comfort of the familiar, except, of course, it isn't. This situation is extremely frustrating for me because I know I have a lot to offer. I know from emails I've had from listeners and readers of the book that people find my work interesting and helpful, and I do feel that I've let people down by bailing out, as well as letting myself down. Therefore, this episode is a call to action. I'm restarting this podcast and I have promised my girlfriend that I will do an episode every week from now until December. I've promised her it was a very heavy, serious discussion involving a painful yet completely accurate elucidating by her, of my faults. Not in a nasty way, we have a wonderful relationship, but in a in a caring way, and it was the kick up the arse that I very much needed to hear. So I hope to record some episodes with her in the not too distant future, because having a conversation with somebody will make it much easier to put out regular episodes, and she has a wealth of knowledge and experience that will prove invaluable. So I've committed to doing a weekly episode from now till December. I promised my girlfriend I will do that, and I reiterate that promise here to you, the listeners. So in the meantime, I need your help. In order to continue this podcast, build into a regular thriving community, I need your input. I'll shortly be starting a Patreon page, and all contributions will be very welcome. But more than that, I need your feedback and questions. So please, please, please send me any questions or observations you have on anything to do with psychology, philosophy, mental health, or the general business of living life as a human being in this crazy, confusing world. I can't emphasize enough how important your input is. So if you want this to continue this year, next year, many years to come, please get in touch. Send me your questions. You can send me a message via the Facebook page, Positive Thinking and the Meaning of Life. You can email me, marcus.freestone@yahoo.com. Or, in order to make it easier for people to contact me, I have recently joined that Twitter thing, which I don't particularly personally have much time for. But I am now on Twitter. Positive Thinking and the Meaning of Life is on Twitter, @thinkingmeaning. @thinkingmeaning, all one word, capital T, capital M, @thinkingmeaning. There are buttons with links to all the ways you can contact me on the Positive Thinking and the Meaning of Life page on marcusfreestone.com, which be my website, which I've recently spruced up so it looks nicer. Okay, that's all that out of the way. That's why I've been away, partly. So now we're going to go on to the topic of the week, which is self-sabotage. So why do we self-sabotage? Well, the noted psychiatrist R.D. Lang wrote a book called The Divided Self. Now, he was specifically talking about schizophrenia in that book, which was his speciality, but we are very much a divided self, all of us, because we're divided into the conscious and subconscious in our brains. And there's been a lot of research done over the years into the relationship between the conscious and subconscious brain and conscious and subconscious cognition and particularly decision making. And it seems to be unarguably the case that in many instances your subconscious makes a decision for you a split second before you become consciously aware of it. And I have a perfect example of that. I don't drive, even though I'm nearly 48. I know. Is that a failure? I don't know. Anyway, I don't drive, but when I was 18, I had a number of driving lessons. And this incident is a perfect illustration of how much the subconscious brain controls our actions. My driving instructor was a fairly chilled out, relaxed guy, and we would chat about music and comedy and things as we were pootling along the roads of South Wales. And on this occasion, I was driving along a long stretch of straight road. I was doing probably 50, 55 miles an hour. And as is often the case with driving, my mind had wandered. Studies have shown that when you're driving, you are only paying conscious attention to the act of driving and your surroundings 25% of the time, which is a bit scary and explains why there are so many road traffic accidents around the world every year. So if you think about that statistic, when you're driving along, three of the four cars around you, their drivers aren't consciously aware of you. So anyway, I was driving along about 50, 55 miles an hour, and my attention had completely wandered for about a minute or so, and something happened, and I suddenly became consciously aware that I had just slammed the brakes on. And I thought, what the hell's going on? It was like waking up out of a deep sleep. I had no awareness of what had been going on the last minute or two. I was just aware that, oh, I've just slammed the brakes on. What's, oh dear, better pay attention. And my driving instructor said, I assume you meant to do that. And I paused for a second because I thought, before I answer him, I have to consciously work out what's just happened. And I looked up and I saw what had happened was someone was trying to overtake me, but it wasn't viable to overtake because there was oncoming traffic and he wasn't going fast enough. He was driving ridiculously recklessly. But essentially, my subconscious stopped a serious accident, because if I hadn't slammed the brakes on when I did and slowed down from 50 to about 20 in a couple of seconds, he would have gone straight into the oncoming traffic because there wasn't enough space to overtake me. And as he sped off, going ridiculously fast, my instructor said, look at that idiot. And I looked up at the car that had just done this, and he had three young kids, sort of infant age, that were in the back. They were not even sitting in the back seat. They were sitting on the sort of parcel shelf of the rear window, not seatbelts or nothing. And my instructor said, well, it's fine for him to drive like an idiot when he's on his own, but with three little kids in the back. And so he said, I assume you meant to do that. I looked up. I took about 2 seconds to assess the situation. And I said, yes. And he said, well done. Because this car I was in had dual controls, and I got to the brake before my instructor did. So I reacted extremely quickly. So it was a very good, not an emergency stop. I didn't completely stop, but I really slowed down. And then once he passed, I carried on. But that's a perfect example of how we are a divided self, that the subconscious often makes our decisions for us. And I don't know about you, but I have often discovered myself in the act of doing something without realizing that I was doing it, and then trying to work out why I'm doing what I'm doing. I know it's not just me that has these experiences. I know I am a bit nuts, but that is, for some reason, that's just how consciousness has evolved. That's how the human brain works. So in terms of self-sabotage, I suppose there will be things lurking in our subconscious, not in a Freudian way. I don't believe in all that Freudian crap about repressed memories and that. That's kind of empirically been proved to be nonsense. The recovered memories, it was a thing in the 80s. In fact, I'm listening to a podcast at the moment, which I recommend, called Satanic Panic, which is about this small town in America in, I think, the early 90s. And there was these reports of all these kids being ritually abused in this satanic way. And it went to court, and I think someone was even found guilty. And it turned out it was all complete nonsense, that basically these kids were reporting that they'd seen people being killed and stuff. And the case went to trial after a year, even though there were no missing children, no one had been killed. The kids were reporting that they'd been attacked with axes and all sorts of things, but none of the children had any injuries. But still it went to court, because these children were very suggestible. And actually it turned out that in their school, they had recently been given a book which was basically saying, which was saying to parents, oh, if your kid you know, is socially awkward and wets the bed, then it probably means they're being abused. And there was a story in there about how satanic abuse could happen. And they gave this book to kids, and then kids started coming up with a story that was exactly like the one in the book. And yet it still went to court. I mean, ridiculous. But people are suggestible. I've now completely forgotten why I mentioned that. I have to backtrack a minute. Why did I start talking about that? Something to do with the subconscious. Oh yes, that I don't believe in. Sorry for that rambling. This isn't a script. So the subconscious can be gullible, and we are highly suggestible. But when I'm talking about the subconscious, I'm not talking, that's the point, I'm not talking about the Freudian unconscious, where there's all these kind of demons lurking, and then suddenly, oh, you're aware of it. That's not how it works. But the plain fact is, to go back to the driving example, if you were consciously aware of everything, if you had to every time you change gear in a car, you had to go, right, I'm going to reach down with my left hand now, I'm going to grip the gear lever, I'm now going to depress the clutch, take my foot off the accelerator, I am going to eat. You know, you see, if you had to consciously go for all that, there would be, it would be impossible to function. So that's why the subconscious has evolved to make these automatic decisions for you. But in the situation we're in our brains and our consciousness, where we're often not really aware of what we're doing, that leaves us open to self-sabotage. Because, for example, it's a thing in CBT, cognitive behavioral therapy, that just because you have a thought, an idea that comes into your conscious brain, doesn't mean you have to act on it, doesn't mean you have to react to it. And I think self-sabotage is, I think one of the primary examples of self-sabotage is we all get self-defeating thoughts, nasty thoughts coming into our head, you know, from the random jumble of our subconscious or dreams or whatever. But self-sabotage is when you choose to go along with them and think, oh, well, I've had this thought to do this self-defeating thing. Well, I've had the thought, so I might as well do it. And the way to counteract self-sabotage, I think, for me, is to have a kind of CBT thing running in your brain and just be aware a thought is only a thought, an impulse is only an impulse. It's kind of a random thing. You shouldn't feel guilty about having bad thoughts, because they come from the jumble of your subconscious and you don't consciously choose to think that. When I was first on antidepressants in my mid-20s, I had the most horrible, horrible nightmares where I was killing people and doing the most appalling things. And for about a year, I felt like I was turning into a serial killer. But it was just the chemicals and this awful outdated medication they'd given me, because it was cheap. Thanks, NHS. It was just the chemicals in it that were scrambling my brain and just having this, and I was depressed anyway. So, yeah, so you don't have to react to your thoughts. You don't have to self-sabotage. So there is always a conscious choice. You can't choose the thoughts and ideas that occur in your brain, but you always, always, always choose your actions. So if you act in a negative, self-defeating way, you're making a conscious choice to do that. And I have thought a lot about this podcast in the last couple of years. Oh, I must do another episode. I must write another book. I must do this, do that. And I've then consciously copped out of it, because I think I am afraid of success, or I have a sort of phobia about routine and committing to something long term. I feel that I'm just not up to it. But by December this year, I will have proved that I bloody well am up to it. I can do it. I'm doing this episode. I'm going to do another one next week, and the week after, and the week after. And by December, I can say, okay, I've done it. At least that's one thing that I'm now not self-sabotaging. So I was looking at some stuff online about self-sabotage this week, and the psychologist Jordan Peterson said self-sabotage isn't fear of success, it's fear of responsibility. And failure allows you to abdicate responsibility. And I think that's really the culmination of the intense conversation stroke intervention, I think that's not putting it too strongly, that I had with my girlfriend last week. It's that for reasons connected with my childhood, which I'm not going to bang on about, it's all in previous episodes or in the books. For reasons connected with my childhood, I have, even though I'm nearly 48, intellectually, I've grown up and I've acquired many skills and much knowledge over the years, and I've developed a lot as a person. But in terms of my emotions and my ability to regulate my life, I'm still a frightened 7-year-old who can't cope. And it's this mishmash between, you know, somebody who's made a massive amount of progress and somebody who hasn't progressed at all in 40 years. And I think that's a lot to do with my self-sabotage. And something else that Jordan Peterson mentioned was the whole Peter Pan myth, that a lot of men don't grow up because they don't want to give up on the potential of childhood. And I think, oh bugger, that's exactly what I've been doing. Because when I was 7 and my life was in emotional turmoil because I just acquired a stepfather who's an absolute word I won't say on this podcast, or I'll have to give it an adult rating, but he was an absolute scumbag and caused me a lot of problems. And at the time, my only ambitions in life were to be a novelist and to live on my own. And in my 20s, part of the reason I got depressed, in fact, the first time I was seriously suicidal, and I was about 28, my first thought was, well, you might as well kill yourself, you can't even get a novel published. When I was a child, junior school age, or 7 till 11, I had all these dreams about wanting to be a novelist, a comedian, a musician, have a show on the radio, be on telly. There's all these things. And then when that all didn't happen, because I didn't know how to make it happen and how to work at things in a systematic manner, and I lived somewhere where there were no opportunities for that sort of thing, I think I didn't grow up because I thought, well, if I admit now that I'm an adult, I have to admit that I haven't fulfilled my potential and I failed in all my ambitions. And that led to me, when I was 35, destroying everything I'd ever written, my life's work, about 2 million words. But there you go. I've built up another thing and built up another body of work, which is much better. So another way that I self-sabotage is living in a constant state of untidiness and chaos. My girlfriend and I have talked many times about getting a house together or me moving into a flat. And one thing it always comes down to is that she's a very, very organized, disciplined, tidy person, a conscientious person. And I'm a complete selfish, creative, intellectual person who just kind of lives in chaos and doesn't notice it. And this is another area in which I haven't grown up, because when I was a kid, my mother would just nag me incessantly about tidying my room, about, you know, having lots of plates and, you know, 4 tea mugs in my room and not washing up and that. And to this day, and I haven't had any contact with my mother for 10 years. I never lived with my father. I haven't seen him for 30 years or whatever. But I have no contact with anyone in my family. I've left all that behind. But still, I when I'm at home on my own, left to my own devices in my flat, I will not do any washing up for a week. I will just leave it because I still have this residual thing from my childhood about just being constantly nagged about it. So I've lived basically on my own since I was about 30 in a house or a flat. And all that time, I've just been massively untidy because I'm trying to sort of assert my independence in some way. But it's completely self-defeating because it drags me down. And I'm sitting here now in my studio recording this, and you know, my bass is over there, my guitar's over there in bits. I've got an old remote control for something that doesn't work is there, and it's just my whole studio area is untidy, and it's just there. Anyway, so that's yet another way of self-sabotage. Okay, I think that's enough. That's enough for this week, talking about all my bloody problems again. Another reason, coming to a conclusion now, folks, another reason why I really, really, really need your input is I am fed up of banging on about myself, and I don't want to talk about my own history of depression and dysfunction and that anymore. I want this to be a positive thing. So, you know, I still have the physician heal thyself thing that I still can't quite sort my own life out. But I know that I am very, very helpful to my girlfriend in particular, but other people. I'm very good at solving other people's problems. I just can't quite get to solve my own yet. But I don't want this to be a sort of agony uncle thing. I don't want, again, I kind of don't really like the sort of a lot of the self-help stuff, but I want your input. I need your input. I don't want to just talk about myself for the next 10 months. So please, please, please get on the Twitters, get on the emails, get on the Facebookers and all that. And please send me some questions because I really want to keep doing this for many years to come. I'm back and I'm not going anywhere. This is Positive Thinking and the Meaning of Life. I am Marcus Freestone, and that is the end of this Blue Moon episode. I'll see you again next week. Please go to marcusfreestone.com, go to the Positive Thinking and the Meaning of Life page, and there's links there to the Twitter, Facebook, email. Please send me some questions, and I will answer them next week and build episodes around what you want. Tell me what you want this podcast to be. I want to build up a genuine community around this. So please send me some questions and I'll see you next week. Bye bye.